on a scale of one to boiling, how boiling are you at the moment?
Oh, I'm roasting. I'm roasting like a chicken. Oh,
it's very, very hot here in the UK at the moment. And if you're listening abroad, you're probably used to, depending on where you live, slightly warmer temperatures than we're experiencing at the moment. What we got, about 31, something like that?
Yes, we've got 31. But this is one thing I want to make a note of, all right, yeah. as a beleaguered English person.
Beleaguered.
You know, we say, oh, you know, we're hot and everyone laughs at us because they're like, yeah, it's only 30. We get 40 over here. But we don't have air conditioning.
No, we don't have air conditioning. And because my neighbours are doing some building work, we're currently sitting in a room with all the windows and doors closed.
Awful.
And we're roasting. But we're doing it because we're here for another episode of Nullpois
is shameful.
Nullpois is lack of respect for jurors.
It's the ultimate humiliation.
The shame that they must be feeling.
Nullpois is no fun.
We are indeed here for another episode of Nullpois. Here together, aren't we?
For the first time in Nullpois history, which is kind of mad to say it,
yeah.
Because we've been going for, about 18 months now?
Yeah.
And we're actually sitting right next to each other and we are recording this podcast
Madness.
Together, which is sort of mad.
Yeah.
Really. Don't know how I feel about it, to be
honest.
No,
we won't make it won't be a habit of it, to be honest. We won't be doing it again. This will be the only time.
No, and we've got a great podcast for you, despite the fact that we have to sort of smell each other's sweat.
Oh, yeah.
We've got loads on the way. We're going to be talking about Spain. We're going to be hearing from a bit of an academic who's been doing some Eurovision-based research, which we really wanted you to hear about. And we're going to be doing another edition of Trivia Time. So all of that is coming up. And also, we should just say as well, what I was doing a little earlier on with Cress here is that I got the old keyboard out, didn't I?
You did,
and
yes.
I was playing you a few little ideas that I've come up with for our Eurovision entry so far.
Yeah.
And what did you think of it?
They need some work.
It needs a little bit of work. We're still working on that. Still working on that. So hear more about that in podcasts to come. But first, here's something else we feel we need to do.
They made a mistake, they messed it all up. Silly old Martin and Laura, but they're putting it right, they're making amends here on Correction Corner.
So, Martin, I believe you've got a little correction you need to make.
Got a little correction here in Correction Corner.
We also did that with the keyboard, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We spent quite a long time on it. I did make a mistake.
You did.
Which was highlighted by somebody getting in touch the other day.
Yeah.
Cress, I know you have that correspondence.
I do indeed. So thanks for letting us know. Playful Mitch saying, Martin, big boo-boo on your trivia. You said Italy left Eurovision 1986. They didn't, did they? They came back. They did leave in 1986, but they came back in 1987. And then you said they didn't come back until the mid-90s. And that wasn't right either, was it, Martin?
No.
They won in 1990, obviously, because then they hosted in 1991 in Rome. And they had that horrible time hosting.
Yeah, made some... Look,
what were you thinking?
Look,
come on, make amends.
I made a mistake. I read some information. I digested it. It was a bit too long and boring. I tried to shorten it and I shortened it wrong.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
Yeah, got it all wrong.
But that's what this is for, Correction Corner. We make amends here and there you go. Thank you for letting us know, Playful Mitch. And it won't be done again.
No, we'll never make that mistake again.
No.
We'll just make a different one. All right, there's loads of news in the world of Eurovision, as there always is. Still to come, by the way, going to be introducing you to a chap who's done some actual Eurovision-based academic research.
Yes, done a whole dissertation on Eurovision,
which is going to be really interesting. So doing that in just a second. But some actual Eurovision-based news for Spain.
That's right. So here's an interesting thing. Spain have basically come out and revealed what their national selection final is going to be for 2022. And it's going to be part of the Benidorm Song Festival. Now, this was an event that existed. It's not a completely new event. It's kind of a spiritual successor to it. So the original, the full title is, I won't be able to say this probably, this will be in the next Correction Corner, no doubt. But the Festival Internacional de la Canción de Benidorm. that ran from 1959. Martin's giving me the eye here.
No, just saying. I think I did well.
1959. And don't, by the way, start telling us things that weren't wrong just so you can hear that jingle again. Okay. So it ran from 1959 until 2006. But it wasn't used to promote Eurovision or anything. It was just used to promote the sort of local area and celebrate Spanish music. Now they're bringing it back, basically, but it's going to be used as the nation selection process for the Eurovision Song Contest. It's returning in February 2022, and it's not going to just be that. There's going to be Spanish songs as well, so it's not entirely just for Eurovision, but it's kind of doubling as it, basically. And it's very interesting. There's going to be quite a lot to it. There's going to be two semi-finals and a grand final. It's going to be broadcast all through through RTVE. They haven't got the full details about, you know, what it's going to be called, whether it's going to be like a public vote, a split jury, but it sounds like Spain's taking this one quite seriously this year, because remember, they are, I believe, in the big five, they're waiting the longest for a win, because it's taking them quite a long time. The last time, I believe, was 1969, I'm going to say.
Oh, I feel a correction corner coming on. I will just say this, where you're double checking that fact so we don't have to do a correction corner later.
That's what I'm doing.
Which is that we've long said this about the UK for a while, that it needs a proper competition to work out a good song. A real, not just a one night thing. We've got some ideas of some songs. Here are five we've chosen earlier. Which one's your best? But instead, a proper kind of long-running thing that's very well done, that maybe mimics in some way the voting process of the Eurovision Song Contest. I know they do that in other countries, have a foreign jury who will vote on the songs, and also have people in the country doing a televote, and they kind of combine that as they would do in the real song contest, and do that over a number of weeks, make a big song and dance about it, mainly just a song, and then they come up with some genuine good stuff that gets in people's heads, that's well written, well thought through. And I think Spain are trying that with this revived contest, and I think the UK and other countries could maybe take a leap out of their book. However, the proof of the pudding will be in the eating,
certainly,
in 2022.
Yes, definitely. And can I just say, I was right. Oh, 1969, well, it was when, of course, they tied. It was a four-way tie with France, Netherlands and the UK, but they still won. They did still win. But yeah, Marta, do you fancy it, Benidorm in February? You know what?
Yeah, I kind of do.
I have to say, they basically have come out and, you know, they really sound like they're wanting to win this one, because that's what they said in the sort of press release about all of this. They said, we're out to win. We've come to win. So, yeah, taking it very seriously, Spain. It's nice to see when countries actually take it seriously and want to go the distance. Let's see how that fares for them.
Now, earlier on, I was having a little look through Twitter, and I came across a tweet from a chap called Will Norton, who was feeling very proud of himself, and rightly so, because he's just got a first in a degree that he's been doing at the University of Lincoln. He's been writing 10,000 words on basically how Eurovision is brilliant, as far as I can tell. So I thought, and we both thought, we've got to get him on the podcast. So, Will Norton, hello.
Hello, you're right.
Yeah, very, very well, thank you. And thank you so much for coming on and having a chat with us. So, I mean, we need to know more about this. I mean, you say 10,000 words of how Eurovision brings Europe together. What was the actual official title of the dissertation you were writing?
It was, Does the Eurovision Song Contest Drive a Sense of Europeanism?
Ooh. Right, I mean, there's so much to unpack in that. I'm just going to go straight in with it. Does it?
Yes, it's the main thing. It does it. It does its job. I said it was the main thing that does that and brings Europe together, which is always nice because it proves me right.
And so take us back then. Explain what made you decide to, first of all, do... I'm guessing you're a Eurovision fan. What made you decide to do your dissertation on this topic?
Yeah, so I've loved it since I was a kid. We used to have like house parties as a kid and watch it, and scorecards and everything and flags. It's great. And then all the way through second year, when you pick your question, everyone kept telling me, do it on something fun. Don't do it on something boring. No offense to some of my friends that did it on really boring topics. and wanted to end up like gouging their eyes out by the end because it's just a lot of work. So I thought, what's more fun than Eurovision? What could I sit and write 10,000 words about over a year? So I just picked it and it was the best thing I've ever done. It was great. I loved every second of it. I got to watch old contests and listen to cheesy Yorra bangers for a year.
What?
My degree.
I mean, that is a year well spent.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, that is a year well spent. So what your findings then were that, yes, it does, and it does bring Europe together. How would you say it does that?
I think it does it in a really weird way of you don't notice it's doing it. Unless you're a really big Eurovision fan, you don't realise that on that one Saturday night in May, 200 million people from across Europe, across 40 countries, are sitting down and watching different cultures, different languages, different people come together. And it's something quite magical about that. And you're almost proud to be European because of it. Yeah. It's in a random city, in a random country that won the year before. And you don't really think of it until you sit down and actually think of everything that goes into it. It's quite nice.
Because I guess there's a lot of arguments as to say the opposite, though, right? There's a lot of people who would say, look at all the quote-unquote political voting that goes on. Look at all the politics that goes into it. And so-and-so always votes for so-and-so. And, you know, there's arguments that go on. And you could point to, I guess, a lot of negativity. Is it that kind of the balance then that's skewed towards it being bringing people together? Or is even the kind of the fallings out all part of being a big family?
Yeah, it's a dysfunctional family of everyone falling out. And trust me, when I told people I was doing my diss on Eurovision, everyone just said it's political and they all hate us. But you've always got that estranged uncle in the family. And I feel like that's the UK, really. yeah, it brings us, even the aspects of that political voting and friends and we're never going to win again narrative. You watch it just to see, are we really that bad? And other people in Europe watch it to go, are they really that bad? And I think that is another thing. It's wonderful like that. It's so weird. It's wonderful.
Now, did you have to, in terms of when you were doing this, I'm assuming, did you have to like get in contact with people for research? Did you have to interview anybody? Or was it just watching Eurovision? How did you go about your research?
Yeah, it was quite hard. So originally I wanted to interview a lot of people and talk to them a lot about it. But then obviously big pandemic kind of hit and made it quite difficult to do that. So it was a lot of looking at voting data.
Oh, okay.
A lot of that, which wasn't the most fun aspect, I'm not going to lie.
No, but does intrigue me. What did you discover doing your number crunching?
Yeah, anything, give us a little facts or trivia or anything that you found.
Basically, that Norway, Sweden and Denmark love each other a lot.
Well, we could have told you that, Will.
Yeah, to be fair, I wish I could say it's some tidbit of wisdom on that front, but that one was just, they're very similar. I noticed countries that have very similar language groups, weirdly Hungary and Finland, which are nowhere near each other, but their languages are really similar. Because of that, vote quite similarly.
Okay.
Which was quite interesting to say they're absolutely miles apart, don't border or anything, and they're quite different countries, culture, style. Their languages are similar, and because of that, they voted similar. It's quite weird.
You say you went back and looked at older contests, and I imagine you've been looking at Eurovision throughout its decades-long history. Have you noticed a change in the way that the competition has brought the continent together?
Yeah, I feel like I watch it, like I said, with my family, and back in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s.
Are you that old, Will?
Yeah, older than I look. They would have watched it and the countries, they would have known every single country on the TV. It was all Western Europe. And then when it got bigger and the breakup of Yugoslavia and the breakup of the USSR and more countries joined, now I think watching it with families and friends, they always go, oh, forget that's a country.
Yeah.
And it's that aspect of how much it has changed and it's bringing parts of Europe together that my dad had no idea where Albania was.
Yeah.
Like, he couldn't find that on a map. He didn't know it was a country. But he still sat there and liked the song. So, yeah, it brings places and people that don't know they exist together as well.
And have you got plans to kind of build on this at all? Are you going to go for a PhD in Eurovision? Are you going to rival Dr. Eurovision?
I'm looking at it. I'm not going to lie. I'm doing a master's degree and I'm looking at a master's dissertation on it. develop it even further, see how much we can push it out, how many more contests I can watch.
Yes.
Has there been any standout contests? Because you must have watched so many now.
Oh, tell me about it. I feel like 2009 was the last time the UK did good, so that stands out in my brain now. Yeah.
Was that the last? No, I think that was the first one with Graham Norton, was it, I think?
I believe so, Moscow. And then, of course, I've got to say the stereotypical 1974 and ABBA.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to, aren't you? It's rude not to. But yeah, that was quite interesting to watch. And the UK not giving ABBA any points was a move on our part that angered me.
We really set the tone for the next few decades, didn't we, by doing that?
We don't deserve any points still to this day because of that. Yeah. I was angry.
I agree. Will, it's been brilliant talking to you. I just wanted to get your thoughts, just to end, on where we go from here. I mean, knowing what you know now, having done the research that you've been doing about the way that Eurovision can bring people together, what are your thoughts for the future of the competition?
I think it's going to be bigger than ever. I think now, next year especially, looking at when hopefully we'll have a contest in like a post-pandemic world, in like the first proper concert where Brexit's officially happened, I think we're going to look, it's needed more than ever, especially for the UK, to bring us closer to Europe. Look at the Euros. It brought us to Europe. It was all across Europe, but it's had that rivalry. That's a bit different with Eurovision. You don't really, there is rivalry, but it's more laugh at other countries and laugh at us.
Yeah.
And laugh at each other instead of absolutely want the country to lose like in football. I think it's needed more than ever now. And it'll be nice to see next year how that works out.
Is there anything that you think the UK need to be doing next year to not get double nullpoint?
Take a risk.
Mm.
Like, take a risk. Don't embarrass ourselves with just bland. As much as I feel bad saying it, just, I don't know, cartwheels across a stage or something. Something.
Do some acrobat. If in doubt, do a cartwheel. That's it.
Set someone on fire.
Perfect idea. Great. Will, I absolutely agree with you on that. I do think something, you know, out of the box and different needs to happen for next year if the UK is going to do really well. Fascinating research as well. It really is. Best of luck with the future of your studies, especially if they include more Eurovision-based research. Looking forward to hearing more about it. And thank you for coming on Nul Poir.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you once again, Will, for that. Great to hear. Love to hear if you take it further as well. And did you hear him say there, Martin, that the UK should maybe be taking a risk for the next century? I think that bodes well for us, don't you think?
What, you mean our own...
Yes, because we're a risk, I would say.
We're definitely a risk.
Yeah, if you could just start cartwheeling across the stage, I think we've got this in the bag.
I'm going to learn to cartwheel.
Okay.
And I'm going to learn how to write better songs than Correction Corner. And then I think we're perhaps in with a shout. Yeah, thank you very much, Will. Now, I'm just thinking, and I'm using the sundial. It's very hot today. I'm using the sundial this time in order to tell the time. And I'm looking at it now. Have you got any questions to ask me about the sundial?
Why have you got a sundial inside the house?
It's not working properly, but I don't need it to. Okay. But still ask me the question.
I mean, that's just what I wanted to know. What's going on there?
No, ask
Why
me.
Why do you use your watch?
Well, because this sundial tells me something in particular.
Yeah.
And it tells me that it's trivia time! Yes, it's trivia time, the bit of the podcast where Laura or I give you a bit of information about the song contest. And what I thought I'd do this time, seeing as we were talking there with Will about one of his standout song contests being 2009, I thought I'd maybe have a little look at 2009 and look at the winner, which was, and you will definitely know this, if you're even sort of a casual Eurovision watcher, you will probably remember the guy with the violin, Alexander Rybak. And Fairy Tale, which was such a great song. And it's kind of one of those ones that has stood the test of time, especially in the world of Eurovision. Everybody knows this is a bit of a Eurovision classic. But how much do you actually know about where it comes from and what it's about? I don't know whether you've ever listened to the lyrics in detail.
I a little bits of it. I've been listening, listen more to the violin, to be fair, because well, it's great. He loves
his
violin, doesn't he?
There's a lot of violin going on. Well, it was written by Reback himself. It was written about his ex-girlfriend, which I think never bodes well.
No, it doesn't.
To start a song.
Was she the girlfriend at the time? Or
No.
She was already an ex.
She was already an ex. This is Ingrid. We even know her name.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And he knew her at the Institute of Music in Oslo. And he was thinking, right, what could I write? And he wrote it about her. And he got the inspiration of a creature, again, doesn't go well, called the Holdra. A beautiful female creature. Interesting start. Nice,
yes,
and complimentary.
That's good.
Beautiful female creature from Scandinavian folklore. Who lures young men to her and then curses them for all time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, he wasn't bitter at all then.
He wasn't bitter at
Orcs
all.
Orcs that he then won with that song.
Yeah.
Orcs
yeah.
for Ingrid.
Yeah.
Ingrid,
and in a way, he has been cursed because he physically is attached to a violin. And I think that that Ingrid is maybe to blame. For that. That's what's got on there.
I never thought of it as maybe it was a witch's curse.
It's a witch's curse.
Oh, God.
Yeah, poor old Ingrid. She didn't know what she was letting herself in for, but there you go. And I should also mention, just while we're on the subject of Fairy Tale by old Alexander, that it did pretty much the best ever in the Norwegian Melody Grand Prix, so the selection competition in order to represent Norway. It won an absolute landslide. It just did so well. Around 600,000 people got in touch in order to vote for it in Norway, which is a record at the time. I don't think it's ever been surpassed. And
finding out about that in
Correction Corner. And it got a huge jury score as well of around 748,000 or so, which is just the biggest victory in the contest history, and it certainly was at the time. There you go. There's a bit of information on Trivia Time.
Lovely stuff. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, before we go, we've got some very exciting news about the podcast next week. We've got a special guest that we're going to be speaking to. We're really excited about it. I'm not quite sure how it came about, but I got chatting to a very prominent UK broadcaster, a chap called Ian Dale. I was talking to him in a cafe, and I mentioned,
as you do,
our podcast, just thinking it would pass the conversation. Turns out he is a massive fan.
Yeah.
I guarantee he knows more about it than we
do.
Oh,
he will do, yeah.
Like, sure. He was already giving me the stats and the figures, and I was thinking, he's already well above our level of knowledge
here. We'll get there one day, Martin.
But he's agreed really kindly to have a chat with us on Norpois, and you're going to be hearing that interview on next week's podcast. So make sure you listen for that. Going to be a really fascinating chat with Ian Dale from the UK radio station LBC. Going to be talking. He's a big like political commentator,
yes,
isn't
he? Is.
And,
yeah,
and
yeah,
he's very kind of well thought of and got views that people want to hear. People want to hear what he has to say, and we definitely want to hear what he has to say about Eurovision. So that is to come next week. In the meantime, wanting to hear from you, if you've spotted one of the many mistakes that we've made in the program today, as seems to be the case, or you've got anything else that you want to add, we want to hear from you, and Chris has got the details of how to get in touch.
I do indeed. Yes, have you written any dissertations on Eurovision, much like Will? Get in touch, let us know. So yeah, you can contact us on Twitter. We're at Poinnull on Twitter. Follow us there as well. We're also on Instagram. We'll be putting some pictures of Martin at his keyboard up in just a moment's time. So do check those out. It's Norpois Podcast on Instagram. If you want to send us an email, tell us a bit more about your dissertation or anything else you want to get in contact with, we're norpoispodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget, if you're enjoying all this malarkey, do subscribe to us. Do drop us a 5-star rating on iTunes or on anything you're listening to. Give us a review because it really does help the algorithms if you do. You've been getting in contact with us, people. So if you're enjoying this and you still are, just give us a rating.
Yeah.
It's not hard. Go
it's
on,
not
do
difficult.
It.
Oh, even I could do it.
Even Martin could.
Even I could do it. Thank you very much. Nice to see you in person.
Yeah.
We're now going to open a lot of windows.
Please put the fan on.
Because we're so hot.
Oh, terrible.
And we'll see you next time. Time on another edition of Norpois!
Quick, get the fan on.
Oh my God, it's hot.